This will come as a shock, I know, but I am almost speechless. The reason I am here, they tell me, is that I played the game a certain way. That I played the game the way it was supposed to be played. I don't know about that. But I do know this. I had too much respect for the game to play it any other way. And if there is a single reason I am here today, it is because of one word. Respect. I was taught you never ever disrespect your opponent or your teammates. Or your organization, or your manager, and never, ever your uniform. Make a great play, act like you've done it before. Get a big hit, look for the third base coach, and get ready to run the bases. Hit a home run, put your head down, drop the bat, run around the bases. Because the name on the front is a lot more important than the name on the back. That's respect. I want to say thank you to friends like Barry Rosner, great writer and good friend. It's fun talking baseball with you, Barry. Thank you.
Man. That's Ryan Sandberg on the day he was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York. And he thanked his friend and his collaborator on some things at different points in his life, Barry Rosner. And Barry Rosner joins me, Matt Spiegel, and him, Lawrence Holmes, right now on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. Can I say collaborator? Is that okay, Barry? Because that's a wonderful moment.
Yeah, man.
I forgot
about that, honestly. And he did that. Obviously, I didn't do that. You know, he took most of what I wrote verbatim from the first time I read it to him. And he loved it. But obviously, I did not know he was going to do that. I had forgotten that he did that. I've never watched it because I was afraid to. I was so nervous. It's funny, that day, it was such a great day, but I was so nervous because as much as I enjoyed writing it, once we were on the precipice, I got up from where I was sitting and walked about 200 feet back and just started pacing because it suddenly hit me that I might've just ruined this guy's life. And so I was nervous. And we got a laugh in the first 10 seconds, I think. And I thought, okay, this is going to be okay. And then, of course, it was almost universally beloved quickly. It was like a revival meeting up on stage. Rhino said that he could hear the guys behind him, all the Hall of Famers sitting behind him, saying just going along with them the whole time, saying, that's right, that's damn right, you're damn right, and over and over again. And he felt that energy from them, and those guys loved that someone was saying the right things and had an idea that baseball should be played the way that it had always been played up until, I don't know, maybe 10 years before that or whenever that started. And as good as the day was, it was a lot better that night when late that night at the team hotel outback. Sorry, this is.
Yeah, hang on, Barry. But before we even get to the night, let's add the context. Let's go ahead and put the point on it. That's it. Barry wrote the Hall of Fame speech of Ryan Sandberg. And if anybody has not seen it or has not heard it, it came out passionately in defense of baseball and in anger at performance-enhancing drug users and at the league for kind of allowing it and looking the other way. So when he talks about the revival, Lawrence, he's talking about a whole stage full of Hall of Famers who were like, finally, somebody is saying it. And that's the risk that you took, Barry, that you were afraid might have ruined his life. And, of course, it did not. It did the opposite, if anything.
Well, and fellas, credit to him. You know, when we first talked about it, I said, look, you could do what everybody else does. You could thank every player, every coach, every manager, and everybody you've ever known in baseball, and you will bore the living hell out of everyone, and no one will be surprised because you're Ryan Sandberg. And and he laughed, and he said, well, what do you have in mind? And I said, well, you could make a statement that people will never forget. And he said, well, I like that idea. I said, all right, well, we had been in Cooperstown for a preview. So I said, just give me a day. And on the plane on the way home, it took me about 15 minutes to write the whole thing. And I was thinking about it on the drive back to Albany. And I remember the intersection I was at when I had stopped at an intersection and I saw a red light, and it just hit me. You know, knowing how to turn two is more important than knowing how to find the little red light on the dugout camera. And I wrote it on the back of a Kleenex box, because I didn't want to forget that one. But the rest of it I wrote on the plane on the way home. And the first time I read it to him, he loved it. And the credit goes to him because, look, when you know someone really well, and we had written a book together and done so many things together, when you know someone really well, it's easy to find their words for them. But the credit goes to him for wanting to do it, because I think there was quite a bit of risk there. No risk on my part. I mean, you know, nobody cares about me. No one would have known. And, you know, he felt it was that important. So all credit to him for doing it. And it was a life-changing day for him.
Barry, the people that we cover, you cover them, you're professional, you have a professional relationship with people. What was it about Ryan that allowed you to kind of let down your wall of reporter, athlete, to then making him a friend?
Well, when it was strictly player-writer, I would say it was extremely professional, although I did invest a lot of time in him. I mean, look, people thought he had nothing to say, and people thought he was boring, and people thought he wasn't very smart, actually. And those things were all wrong, but no one had spent any time trying to get to know him and investing the time. In any relationship of any kind in your life, you've got to invest the time. And I invested the time and got to know him, and we developed a very good working relationship, but I would say it was extremely professional until he retired. And then we wrote a book together and became good friends. And he came back for a couple of years and then retired again. And so obviously at that point we had become friends, but I think it really starts with giving the guy a chance. I mean, look, he wasn't dumb. He knew that if he was boring, guys wouldn't stand around his locker very long. And that was great. He didn't want any of that. He wasn't interested in any of that. You know, he was worshipped in this town. I don't know how much you guys remember that, if Matt, you were even here at that time, but he was absolutely worshipped in this town, and he could have been huge in terms of endorsements and all those other things, and he just didn't want it. He wanted to play baseball, and he wanted to go home. And playing baseball was very hard for him. I mean, they called him Kid Natural, and it all looked very natural because he was such a great athlete. But baseball was really hard, and he worked really hard at it. And the responsibility he felt to be Ryan Sandberg every single day after June of 1984 was a lot of pressure for him. And he felt he had to be perfect, and he felt he had to be great, and he wanted to make sure that the people coming to the park to see him were getting what they paid for. So that was where his time was spent. And if he didn't have to spend it talking to reporters, that was fine with him. So he didn't give most people a lot, but they also didn't try to get a lot. And I was fortunate that I did. And like I said, then that relationship changed years later when he retired. But Lawrence, I think it's just as simple as giving a guy a chance to voice what he thinks, or to expound on what others had not allowed him to, simply because they didn't hang around long enough to find out.
I love the question from Lawrence to Barry Rosner about how you got in. And of course, even though he's a great player, he's a person, and he needs to know that you actually give a crap. So then the payoff for that personally and professionally maybe culminates with that night after the speech is delivered, and he's thankful for what you guys did together, and he's comfortable enough with you as a friend. What did you get to be a part of that night after the speech, Barry?
Well, It was the best night I ever had in baseball, that's for sure. At the team hotel at the bar, I don't know, I think he called me at my hotel at around 10 o'clock or something like that and said, you got to get over here. And I said, well, I can't go in. You know, it's only for Hall of Famers. He said, I'll meet you at the gate. And got me in. We walk in the bar, and there's 60 Hall of Famers. And I was like, Rhino, I want to meet Koufax, Seaver, and Aaron. That's all I want. Well, now he thinks it's funny, and he's introducing me to everybody, including Ozzie Smith, who I hated. So, I mean, I want nothing to do with that. But, you know, he's got my camera, and he's taking pictures of me with all these guys. Seaver broke my camera, by the way. I should post that picture. It looks like me and a fuzzy John Madden. I should probably find that somewhere.
Wait, why did he break your camera?
He dropped it. Seaver, oh. Well, Rhino's taking the picture. This is before cell phones. Rhino's taking the picture, and Seaver, who was overserved, came stumbling up to him and knocked the camera out of his hands. The guy with, you know, 14 gold gloves drops the camera, and there goes the camera. It did not work anymore after that. But thankfully, you know, it had a memory stick, so I got some good pictures out of there. But later on the patio, you know, we took some more pictures. And then Rhino and I just sat out there for hours talking about what had happened that day. And it was such a high. It was such – we couldn't come down from the high of what had just happened. And we just kept reliving it over and over again. He did say that he saw me a football field away pacing in the back, and that it was a distraction for him. And I said, well, what are you doing looking back there? He said, well, I was looking for you. I wanted to know how we were doing. I said, well, I was a little nervous. I didn't know how this was going to go, but that, I just remember sitting out there and talking for hours about it. And I don't think either of us understood really the magnitude of it or that it was going to change his life as much as it did. But
did you meet Koufax and Aaron? And who was the third one you wanted to meet?
I wanted to meet Koufax and Seaver and Aaron. I actually sat down and Sandy Koufax could not have been nicer. He doesn't know me from Adam's Off Ant,
which yes. is,
you know, It's a Wonderful Life. Thank you. I mean, he has no idea who I am. And he says, sit down, sit down. And I sit down, and he's telling me about the game he threw in the World Series when he won a World Series game and couldn't throw a breaking pitch because his elbow hurts so bad. I mean, how is this happening? What am I doing there? And why is this happening? Right. That's what kind of night it was. But I do have a picture with Koufax and one with Aaron, but my picture with Seaver is destroyed because he knocked the camera out of his hands.
Barry, for Cubs fans or baseball fans that didn't live through Rhino's run as a Cub, how would you explain the player that he was?
Well, he was a perfect baseball player. I mean, he could do everything on a baseball field really, really well. If you were creating a baseball player, at least in the era in which I grew up, you would create Ryne Sandberg. Tall, extremely athletic, fast, as good first to third or second to home as anybody in the game. Extraordinary fielder, great hands, great eyes, great understanding of the game, great knowledge of everything that was happening with all positions on the field and with his opponents. So, yeah, he hit for average. He hit eventually hit for power. He could steal a base anytime he wanted. One year he stole 54 bases, and people are like, why don't you do that more often? He's like, well, I did it if the situation called for it. I didn't just steal a base because everyone was like, well, why didn't you have a 30-30? Because he had 30 homer seasons, and he had a 54 steal season and many 30 steals. He's like, well, because it didn't call for it. He wasn't about the stats. He's just a tremendous baseball player. Absolutely worshipped in this town on and off the field because he did everything the right way and was so respectful toward the game. If you had a child at that time and you were looking for a hero in sports, this was the guy. He understood he was a role model and he took it very seriously. And you know, it wasn't, you know, for others on the outside looking in, it probably didn't seem like a burden. It probably seemed like the game was easy for him and all these things were easy for him. It was a tremendous burden for him. So it was always his focus to be great on the baseball field. And that meant there wasn't as much time for the other things that everybody wanted, which was being gregarious or, you know, the life of the party or doing the endorsements or being great on TV or any of those kinds of things. And I remember he was criticized for not doing endorsements. And I thought, well, what do you care if he does endorsements? You know, there are people on your radio station at the time who criticized him for that, for being boring. And I thought, damn, the guy's a hell of a baseball player. What do you care? People loved him. I just think it should be noted that as great an athlete as he was, and, you know, he signed to play quarterback at Washington State. He was an All-American quarterback and All-State in baseball and basketball and could have played football, could have played quarterback at a lot of places. It should be noted that it was not his great athletic ability or – you know, the gifts that God gave him that made him a Hall of Fame baseball player. It was his work ethic. And that should never be forgotten. No one ever worked harder. There were better players. There were more gifted players. No one ever worked harder than Ryan Sandberg on a baseball field. And, you know, while others in spring training were drinking their coffee and having breakfast, he was the one who was out on the field taking 60 grounders to his left, 60 to his right, and 60 right at him every single morning of spring training, long after he'd become the greatest fielder at the position in baseball history. So I think that's something that is maybe often forgotten. Mm-hmm. I just think he was, in many ways, misunderstood as the man that he was.
Barry Rosner on Twitter tweeted a picture of, looks like you and Ryan at breakfast. You're wearing, I believe, a Masters hat, and he's got an Amen Corner hat, and it looks like this may have been in recent weeks or months. Last thing, Barry, can you share where he was as a person here in the final months of his life?
Yeah, well, Matt, what makes me most sad about this is that he was in such a good place in his life. I tried to describe to you, and maybe I did a poor job, of how difficult it was for him to be a baseball player. You know, he admitted many times that he didn't have enough fun while he was playing, but the game was just so hard that there wasn't room for that in his, you know, in his world at the time. The game was really hard. He climbed, you know, he was a 20th round draft pick because they thought he was playing football. So he climbs every level of the minor league system and the Philly system. He is blocked by numerous shortstops there, has no future in the Philly system. After being great at every level of the minors, he gets to the majors and then he's traded to the Cubs, and he gets to spring training and he's got five gloves because no one knows what position he's going to play, and ends up playing third base with a week left in spring training, and was terrific, by the way. Moves to second at the end of that year. He has this phenomenal 20-year professional career. He retires and breathes a deep sigh of relief. Then comes the Hall of Fame, gives the speech, deep sigh of relief. And now what am I going to do with the rest of my life? He decides he wants to manage. What does he do again? He starts at the very bottom of the minor leagues, spends 5 years in the minors, climbs every single level, does everything the way he's supposed to. The Cubs say, we don't care. We're not interested in you. He goes to the Phillies, reaches his goal, makes it to the major leagues. He always had goals, and he always took all these steps. Reaches the major leagues. It doesn't work out for whatever reason. It was an old team. It was a bad team. He was a guy who developed young players, so it was not a great fit, whatever. He leaves the Phillies. He comes back here. He calls me. He says, you think they would let me back in? I said, I'm sure they would. I'll call Theo. I call Theo. I tell Theo, hey, he just wants to come back. He doesn't want to work. He just wants to be part of the family again. The Cubs bring him back in. He gets a ring. And now everything in his life is perfect. He's got a wife that he loves, numerous kids, all these grandkids. He's living the best life that he could possibly live finally with no pressure and nothing in his life except happiness. And then this happens. And it just, you know, look, we've all lost people. I've had so much in my life. We all go through it. And you know, sometimes you say, well, that person lived a long time and lived a good life. And sometimes it's unfair. Well, this was a guy who's a young man at 65, who's got, you know, a couple of decades of really good living in front of him. And it makes me horribly sad that he's not going to get that chance now. And, you know, that's life. Some people don't get the breaks. It's just, you know, there was nothing about his life that was easy, and that was okay with him. He believed in hard work. He believed everything should be difficult, and he thought that was a good part of life. But this, I think, was horribly unfair, and I'm sad for him, and I'm sad for his family, and I'm sad for all of Chicago. I just hope Cub fans understand. He truly, he always appreciated Cub fans. He loved Cub fans. He never knew how important he was to them, I don't think, until he got sick 2 years ago, or however long ago it was now. But I hope the Cub fans know that, man, he loved you. He loved you all, and he appreciated you all. And he had a lot of gratitude for his opportunity to play in this city, in that ballpark, for you, the fans, who treated him with so much love and so much respect and so much reverence, all of it deserved, by the way. But he left this place, I hope for a better place, knowing that that he loved you and you loved him. And you know, that's something anyway.
Barry, we appreciate you and we love you very much. Thank you so much for sharing all of this stuff about Rhino.
Yeah, I hope there was something in there for you. I'm wiped out. It's been a long week, and we'll celebrate him. Certainly, we'll celebrate him. It doesn't feel that way right now. Certainly not. I don't know, at least not for me, but we will. And we'll remember what a good man he was and what a great player he was. So I'll let you guys go. Thanks for having me, boys.
Hey, buddy, everybody's processing, and you've done a great service in helping, really. So thank you. Talk to you.
All right, see you, boys.